All right, theory and theology, what is up? What is up? I want to start talking about something that I almost don't even want to talk about. I don't want to talk about it. A lot of people who make content get either some sort of decreased engagement when people start talking about these topics. I don't really know how Spotify for podcasters takes it, but I want to take it from the listenership, you know, because, you know, when I've posted stuff about ancient Egypt, when I've posted stuff about Graham Hancock, you know, and Dolores Cannon and those types of things, you know, you guys like it. I like it. I love talking about that kind of stuff. And you guys know my background by now. I mean, I've talked about it a lot, so I'm not going to talk about it too much right now. And I'm not going to leave you in some kind of weird cliffhanger. I'm going to get straight to the point in a little bit, but just hear me out. I'm not saying I do or don't believe this. I know what I've been taught. You know, I've been taught in school. I know, you know, that there are conspiracy theories out there. I know what we've all been taught in school. And I'm very new to this topic, but it's just fascinating to me because, you know, I've never heard anybody come at it from a perspective that actually is able to dissect biblical Hebrew, biblical Greek, and actually talk intelligently and look at some words. And so through this person, I got wind of this website called blueletterbible.org. blueletterbible.org. Now, a lot of people know that a lot of times when I'm looking at the Old Testament, for me, one of the easiest sources to use is from the Chabad site. I know the one that says for the Onkelos PDF, it's from the Lubavitch Rebbe, and it's from Kehot Publication, and I don't really know the one on the website with the Rashi text, like what version that is, but either way, I like to see the Hebrew with the English. I've been back into studying Hebrew, so I was like, I need a bit of a project, and so we're gonna talk about these theories of the earth, the flat earth theory and the heliocentric theory. A lot of us learned, you know, originally, you know, that the earth is round and like a sphere, like a ball, and or not like exactly like a ball, but like not like completely smooth like that, but more like that than flat, right? And I was kind of like, you know, I do remember this little maybe couple sentences in, you know, probably like a history class way back in the day where they would say things like, people used to think the earth was flat. And I just, you know, like everybody else, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what people used to think. And, you know, just in general, you know, I've been playing with this idea that, you know, I think Graham Hancock turned me on to this idea, just like his content, that, you know, there's this Eurocentric view of the world that anything that's an ancient or indigenous type of idea, kind of, you know, the more we go linear in time from history closer to 2024, everything that's current in 2024 is expected to be more accurate, more you know, backed by, you know, all kinds of scientific rigor of experiments and things like that. And I, you know, I kind of get to thinking about it because I'm like, okay, you know, just listening to Graham Hancock in general, you know, and I was kind of talking with a friend about this, and it's not exactly about flat earth or spherical earth or anything like that, but just bear with me for just a couple seconds. We get into talking about this, like, kind of just, I don't know, I was just, like, spouting out ideas. I don't remember exactly how, like, what part in the conversation this came up, but, you know, just we were kind of like, oh, we both like Graham Hancock, and then, you know, just kind of like how there's these theories that he kind of looks at, you know, the field of archaeology. I'm on a complete lack of sleep, guys, so forgive me. I had slept, but not very well. I haven't been sleeping well lately, and had some crazy dreams last night. But anyways, there was this, like, he looks into archaeology, and a lot of times we think about, you know, okay, like, back then, they only had, like, stones and, like, you know, pieces of sticks, and they were, like, running around without their clothes on and all this kind of stuff, and, like, we look at that and we're like, how, like, we're taught to think, how uncivilized, how primitive, and, you know, they didn't think clearly and they didn't know anything. These people were less intelligent than we are because we have computers and all this kind of stuff, you know. And I was kind of thinking about it too. I was like, you know, what have we really developed as humans, you know, past, like, the ancient people, you know? Things like metals, plastics, glass isn't that new of a thing, but we could maybe argue that there are, you know, tribes that didn't really have glass, things like that, and, you know, just kind of making different things. And I would say probably the biggest technological advances are things like information sharing, radio, telephone, internet. Now we're into AI. But really, I'm not saying that, like, I know so much that, like, that's nothing, you know, because it is something. But in the big scope of things, it's like, well, if you look back, like, I think about my great-grandparents' age, you know, and how, you know, even my grandma, within her lifetime, she went from outhouses, you know, to having internal plumbing. You know, they went from, I think they had lights and stuff, TV back then. At a certain point, they got a TV. But in my great-grandparents' age, no TV. People didn't really have a lot of access to cars. Like, my grandmother passed away when she was 105 years old. And there was a point where I went through kind of thinking about, wow, when she was 1 year old, this was happening in history. And then when she passed away, it was sometime when I was in grad school. I don't remember the exact year, but she was 105. And I started thinking about, like, okay, what were things like 105 years ago? It's like, things were so different 105 years ago, you know, from that point in time, you know. And even from when my great-grandmother passed away up until now, 2024, other than AI and some extra tweaks on technology that we already have that exists, and things like what Tesla is coming out with, Elon Musk and all like that kind of stuff, some of the green technology and things like that, there's not really been too much movement of the needle on things. But anyways, I guess the point I'm trying to get across is, like, we're taught to think that, like, just because we have all these advancements, in things that are like physical things that we, you know more, that we're better. But then when you think about it, it's like, okay, like, there were people back in these ancient times that are supposed to just have had like sticks and dirt and loincloths and rocks and things, and running around in the forests or in the mountains or in the jungles or wherever they were, in the desert, just running all around the place, like, you know. And we're taught to think like that they knew nothing, but yet they've got architecture and astrological and astronomical types of information that we still don't fully understand, right? Even with all of our computers and technology, we still can't figure out the mysteries of the Great Pyramids and, you know, all these other like types of monuments and things. And a lot of them do tend to point to, you know, something astronomy related, right? And so that's one thing that, like, just in general, that's kind of like my general kind of like understanding, is that just because something is advanced in time, just because it's closer to now, doesn't mean that it's better and more accurate. That's kind of my viewpoint on things. You know, we're losing sense of community, we're losing things that are important. I think to some extent a lot of the mental health related situations coming up are because we're lacking in so many things. Like, we have all these technologically advanced foods that are like killing us. You know, you go to a Ralph's grocery store versus like a organic market, you know, go to a Ralph's grocery store, eat that chicken, the Ralph's brand or whatever that select brand or whatever that chicken is, compared to like something from Sprouts or like a farmer's market of somebody who home grew and fed that chicken, or it was local and you eat that chicken, it doesn't even taste the same. It tastes better, you know. The homegrown ones taste better. They don't have these weird aftertastes. They're like a normal size. They're not like hormonally like manipulated. You know, you eat tomatoes out of the store, like as like a Ralph's grocery store. You know, I grew up eating homegrown tomatoes, homegrown greens and things like that. Kale. The first kale I ever ate was from our own garden, and I usually ate tomatoes out of our garden. And you could just pick them, you know, depending how you are with cleanliness and things like that. You could dust them off or wash them off and just eat the thing. You know, you give me a tomato from Ralph's and ask me to eat it with no salt or anything, it's like, those things have no flavor, zero flavor whatsoever. They don't even taste like anything. I've never had a tomato from Ralph's that tasted better than a tomato that we've grown in our yard. You know, kale, you know, when I first came across kale, I was like, wow, it's thick, the way it feels. It was like really dark, and, you know, I could take off like a piece of it, again, like either dust it off or wash it off with water or something, and just eat it straight out of the garden. You know, and it was good. You could eat it. The first time I purchased kale in a bag, it was bitter. It didn't have the same texture. It was all thin and like weird. It's not even good. And we pay a fortune for that kind of food. And it's like, how is that more advanced than something that you just put seeds in the ground in your yard and you grow it yourself? You know, it tastes way better than the stuff you're getting at the store. Now, you have to know about, like, soil and all that kind of stuff. My parents know about that. I don't really know about that, but you have to know something. You can't just, like, it's not going to be, like, 100% always better all the time. But anyways, let me get on with it. So, I'm not very well versed in what I'm talking about. I'm so new to this topic, like, overnight, almost literally. So, I'm kind of tying together what I do know and kind of just my own, like, background thinking. But just some things I've come across. So I gave you that link for that Bible text. And so let's go through some basic names. Because I was thinking, okay, I know that we were taught in school that people used to believe in the flat earth. So when did this idea of a not flat earth come up? Now, you know, Copernicus was the name that I've heard of. And then there's this guy, Aristarchus of Samos, an ancient Greek astronomer. Now I'm just reading this off the internet. And a mathematician who presented the first known model that placed the sun at the center of the known universe with the earth revolving around it. So Aristarchus of Samos, his high altitude observatory, what's his lifespan? I'm not gonna go too much into him, because I don't know enough to just start like talking about these people's histories. His lifespan was from 310 or circa 310 to circa 230 BC or BCE, before Common Era. So for those people who do like the BC for before Christ, or AD for after death, I mean, that's not really what it stands for, but that's kind of in general what people say to just get an understanding. So, you know, we calculate our years based on pretty much the approximation of, you know, Christ being on earth, either his birth or the death, give or take 30-ish years or so, and that's how we are in the year of 2024 AD or CE, depending if you do Common Era, or people say after death, I think it's Anno Domini or something like that. That's what it actually stands for. And then, so that was his timeline. So he was about 230, he died about 230 years before the time of Jesus. Because we're measuring, basically, we measure by the time of Jesus. Just to keep things, you know, we have to have some kind of standard of measuring. I know the Jewish calendar doesn't use that same time frame. They have a different calendar. They're in like 6,000 something years, over 6,700 something years. I don't remember the exact year. I should look that up too. But okay, that's Aristarchus of Samos. So he came up with this theory sometime in his lifespan, obviously. And then Copernicus, Nicholas Copernicus. I'm going just Wikipedia, so anybody else can look it up. Nicholas Copernicus, February 19th of 1473 to May 24th of 1543. So he's like way after, you know, he's, you know, they say was a Renaissance polymath, active as a mathematician, astronomer, and Catholic canon, who formulated a model of the universe that placed the sun rather than earth at its center. In all likelihood, Copernicus developed his model independently of Aristarchus of Samos, an ancient Greek astronomer who had formulated such a model some 18 centuries earlier. So they were approximately 18 centuries apart, these two guys. But either way, even if you look at Copernicus versus Aristarchus, these theories are still, in a way, like, his theory is kind of new. If you think about, you know, Columbus coming towards North America, we have that date, you know, 1492, right? So 1473 was the birth of Copernicus. So about almost, when Copernicus was about 19, was about when Columbus hit North America, right? So that's kind of like a picture of like how long ago this is going on. And the other guy was, you know, before Christ, like some 200, 300 years before Christ, before Jesus. And so that's kind of the general timeline we're working with, right? So, and these are things I didn't know. I'm saying it because I'm like literally looking this up as I'm talking. Like while I was listening to people talking, I was getting a, you know, I was kind of typing out in my phone, like just looking up just the website, so I would have the websites open. But I don't really know, you know, more than what I'm saying right now. I listened to this half of a debate. It was like a religious debate, very Christian, Bible Belt-ish debate. Now, I am from, for the most part, raised in Los Angeles, California. We, you know, the culture here is so different, you know. It's not Bible Belt-y at all. It's, people would call it maybe more woo-woo, more hippie-ish, very, like, artistic culture and, you know, the center of entertainment. You know, it's almost opposite of the Bible Belt. Like, people out here aren't, I wouldn't say there's not, like, a God-fearing environment, because that's not true at all. I think it comes out in a different way. Like, people here are very just, like, free-flowing about things. There's so much diversity that you kind of just learn to be like, there's all these ideas and all these people, and we just kind of learn to, you know, keep our minds, you know, flexible and hear people out. I feel like that's really common out here. Versus I feel like Bible Belt is like, the Bible is the one, the true, the only Christian way to like live and do life. There's no such thing outside of that. And there's very strongly this evangelical culture. And, you know, out here you don't really have that. People are kind of just like, do what works for you. I wouldn't say that people are against the Bible out here. I know that's kind of a perspective, but people aren't against it. Most people I know respect, you know, it's more like, if you're going to be talking prejudice against other people, that's really not okay out here. Versus I feel like in other places you're allowed to just say whatever you want, but here it's like you can't just be like bashing people. Like, it's not okay. Like, it's gonna be hard to get in a, you know, pretty solid social circle with people if you are just a complete hater and you don't accept other people's cultures. I'm not saying you have to believe everybody's culture, but you kind of have to understand, hey, there's Muslims, hey, there's Jews, hey, there's Hindus, hey, there's Buddhists, hey, there's atheists, and we can all go to lunch together and not fight, you know, on a regular basis. And you do get into some really deep conversations with people about their family lives and things like that. If you can be authentic, you know, you can make really good close friendships and relationships in cities like LA. But I feel like the people who have trouble with that authenticity, and they're very like, you know, too much in their ego, unable to kind of hear other people's perspectives. I'm not saying you have to believe everything, but just like how people get that anger when they hear something that they don't really understand, that's something that I feel like people kind of actively out this way. A lot of the open-minded thinkers kind of tend to kind of try to steer away from like, let me get angry first. Like, it's more like you try to practice more like, let me just hear it, you know, let me hear you. I know your life and your experience is different than mine, but let me just hear it. I'm willing to sit and listen, and if I have some kind of judgmental, offensive opinion towards what you said, I will keep it to myself. You know, there's no reason to be like losing relationships and fighting over stuff. Like, if somebody says something I don't believe, I can just simply say, oh, you know, I kind of see things a little bit differently, but, you know, thanks for sharing, you know, your opinion. I don't need to share my opinion, you know. I'll share them on here, kind of, you know, but I don't need to, like, go into a relationship with people just telling everybody, like, every single thing, you know, that I believe and just being like, you're wrong. Like, I don't know, you know. Everybody thinks that the other person's wrong, so there's no point in, like, losing relationships over it, you know. I'd rather hear what everybody has to say and then make up my own mind internally, and I don't really have to share it with people. But anyways, you know, I know that that's, like, a different style. Like, you know, I know, I don't know, it's just for people who don't know the culture out here, there's a big, because I'm not saying 100% of the people are like this. It's just when you live in such a diverse region, you kind of have to be, unless you're just going to hang out with people that all believe like you, you kind of have to be, like, flexible. Otherwise, you're just going to hate everyone, you know, and that's not going to be good. You know, it's not good for business. It's not good for socializing. It's not good for, you know, networking. It's not good for anything. You know, you got to learn to have a good reputation based on not being agreeable, not being like, oh, I accept everything that everybody does, but just being able to hear it. And also at the same time, you don't have to be the loudest, you know, the loudest person roaring in the room. Like, you can be quiet until somebody asks you what your opinion is, you know. But anyways, so, okay, where do we want to go with this? So when it comes to these two guys, they're kind of the big names. Now, I'm pretty sure there are many other people who have theories, but these are kind of the big names that I came across first. So these guys are very spread far apart in their beliefs, and it seems to me that before this, there was a pretty common belief that that the earth had, you know, a flat aspect to it. And for Copernicus to have been part of the Catholic canon, right? Now, when you think of it, it's like, you know, Rome and Catholicism has had a huge role in shaping Christianity as we know it. I mean, I've talked about it on here a lot, but when you think about it, you know, pre-Jesus, before Jesus, there was Judaism. You know, when Jesus was on earth, there was still Judaism. You know, people started calling it the Way. The name got given to people who follow the Way, you know, Christians, which was considered more of a derogatory term. And the name just kind of stuck, you know. And, you know, people who are Christians now, most Christians don't follow the Bible the way that Jesus did, or the way that the disciples did, or the way that Paul did. You don't really see anything in the Bible that looks like modern-day Christianity. Modern-day Christianity was kind of shaped by Rome, by the church, by this infiltration of Roman politics with the Catholic religion, and, you know, infiltrating pagan traditions into this new Christian, you know, religion. Like, if you look at the Bible, those people were Jewish. Jewish people who believed that Jesus was the Messiah. There's even some argument before that, that people weren't really believing that Jesus was the Messiah, or they were still questioning it. There's a lot on, it's just, I'm not even going down that route, but I'm just saying, like, it's interesting that someone who is a mathematician and astronomer, you know, and taking different theories, and then they're also part of you know, the development of the Catholic canon. I mean, the role, I'm not against Catholic people, I'm just saying historically the role of the Catholic Church and the role of Rome, Roman politics, really, really shaped, deeply shaped how modern Christianity looks. Like when you read the New Testament through a Jewish lens, I'm not Jewish, and so, you know, it's not like it's something easy for me to do, but I do study a lot of, you know, Jewish culture. I have for a very long time, because I was raised around, you know, cultures around beliefs in Jesus, and, you know, it always bothered me that we never talked about Judaism, because it was like, well, Jesus was Jewish, well, why don't we know anything about this religion too much other than the Sabbath part, and other than that, we'd never really talked about it. So, that was just my own kind of personal, like, I think we all kind of have, like, weird little hang-ups with stuff, and we're like, well, why do we do this instead of that, or why does my family not go to church, or why are we atheists, or why are we agnostic, or why was I baptized as a child and then never go to church, or we never went to church, or why do we always go to church? You know, like, I think people kind of look at life and they're like, why, you know, especially in your upbringing, you're like, why was I, like, exposed to things this way or that way, or lack of exposure to certain stuff, kept from certain types of ideas, right? So, I mentioned all the Bible Belt stuff to say that, you know, it's not something that is, it's not a comfort level for me, and it's also not something that I come across a lot. Like, when you go to churches out here in, on the West Coast, you know, it's very, very different, from, you know, if you're in some other place. You know, I went to a church in Georgia that was all black. Like, I'd never been to an all black church before in my life. And I was just confused by it, because I was like, oh, there's, like, all black churches. I mean, I understand it. In some certain places, that's probably needed. You know, like, the Adventist denomination has convocations divided by, kind of, like, by ethnicities for the most part. Different cultural groups. But I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying, like, out here you don't really see a lot of stuff like that. Like, we do have, like, a Japanese church out here in LA. There's a lot of Spanish-speaking churches. So, culturally, I get it. But it was just, like, an experience to me that was, like, not something that I'm, like, too familiar with. I was like, this is so different for me. But the sermon / debate, it was basically this guy named Dean Odle and this other guy named, is his name Greg Locke? Let me find his name. I think his name was Greg. Dean Odle. And I've listened to the Dean Odle part so far. And then Greg Locke. So Dean Odle, D-E-A-N O-D-L-E, and Greg Locke, G-R-E-G-L-O-C-K-E, and I'll post the link. And now, I'm not saying that people need to believe in these guys. I don't know these guys' backgrounds. I heard about them through CJ of Amish, the Amish Potato, who had a video about, a live video about 18 minutes in, a little after the 18-minute mark, he starts talking about watching this video about the flat earth, and I was like, let me watch it, you know, it's only 4 hours, it's almost 5 hours long, But I was like, you know, I got interested in the topic, and this guy, you know, the Amish guy, CJ of the Amish Potato, he also kind of, like, I'm not saying I align with these guys' thinkings. I don't really know them. I don't know about their churches. I can't say for sure that I, you know, I'm just talking about what stuck out to me about their debate. So initially in the debate, about 49 minutes or so, almost, or 59 minutes, almost a whole hour, Dean Odle is the guy who believes in the flat earth theory, and Greg Locke believes that the earth is a sphere, and they're both pastors, and so there's kind of a level playing ground there. Dean Odle wrote this book called Like Clay Under the Seal. Like Clay Under the Seal. I see it's on Amazon for $30. And these guys at the beginning start debating. They, you know, they start this argument. And what I do, I kind of zoom out, not physically on the video, but I zoom out like my, like what I'm focusing on, and I start focusing more on their personalities. Now, Dean Odle is more of, he seems, just my, this is my first impression. Again, I don't know these guys. I'm not backing them up. I'm not saying one's more right than the other. I'm just talking about, let's dissect this debate. And, you know, I gave a lot of my background on how I'm becoming interested in this topic, and just kind of my own generalizing about things that are kind of vaguely relevant. So Dean Odle seems more like he wants to teach, he wants to respond to questions, he wants to give answers. When somebody asks him a question, he tries to provide an answer, either from the perspective of something from NASA, or something from some type of a scientific article, or something biblical. And when he's talking biblical, he dives into the Hebrew and the Greek of the Bible, and explains things. And he goes into, like, terminology and explains, like, origins of words and things. The other guy, Greg Locke, seems to be more ego-based, more based on using, like, I'm trying not to sound so negative, but you can kind of just tell with his personality that he tries to intimidate, and he uses different types of intimidation techniques to try to get his points across. He tries to use, like, his passionate speaking style. He tries to use his assertiveness. He tries to use things that aren't necessarily literature, and, you know, things that you can look at, where you can go and look it up for yourself, you know, just in general. He kind of maybe talks about a couple general biblical theories and is like, this is why the earth is a sphere. And then he asked Dean Odle a bunch of questions. I'm not going to get into all the details of that whole first hour, right? First 59 minutes. But they start going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And you can, like, just, for me, it was interesting because at first I was like, I don't want to watch this. Like, to me, it was already a turnoff. You know, I hear a guy who's a previous Amish guy say, oh, there's this flat earth theory that I believe more now. And then he starts talking about things like, you know, women shouldn't preach in church and all these kind of things. And I'm just like, here goes another one of these guys. Like, you know, they were talking about that. I can't remember the name of the singer who made that kind of song about the economy. It was kind of like the Appalachian style music singer who made that song about the kind of about the economy and like the state of things. And, you know, I think CJ had a point. He was kind of like, you know, people aren't, I don't like saying this out loud, but I do kind of agree with this. People aren't as stuck as they may feel like they are. You know, it's not easy to go to work and go to school and get another job, but it's possible to do it. It's not easy to go get training or, you know, make a little bit less and cancel all your subscriptions and downgrade your life for a couple years while you study and hunker down. It wasn't easy for me to leave my friends and my whole life to uproot and come live at home with my freaking parents, you know, when I'm like 40 years old. Like, it doesn't look good. Like, people don't want to do stuff like that. But it's like, when you want to make a change, you know, yeah, you know, the economy is against us. Yes, the government is not really helping. You know, the economy sucks. You know, there are people that are starving more than ever, homeless more than ever. I'm not saying that's not serious, but, you know, what I am saying is that, you know, most people who don't have, like, a disability that prevents them from working to support themselves, they're stuck because they don't make the movements, you know, they don't make those extra sacrifices, you know, that have to be made to get to the next phase. Now, I can't tell people what to do, but I do strongly believe that everyone has the power in themselves to move into something that they want to move into. But you have to do it. You have to do the actions. I mean, someone like me, I am not the most intelligent person. You know, I'm a nerd and I like to geek out on stuff and I like to learn. That works in my favor. Because when I'm really into something, I can learn a lot about it and I can absorb it relatively well. But when I'm not into something and I don't understand it, and it's just like, I literally can read the same thing over and over and over and be like, this does not make any sense to me. You know, I've had classes like that where I'm just like literally winging it. I'm like, let me just learn some terminology and throw it around like I know what I'm talking about, because I just could not absorb that information. Like, my reading comprehension isn't always that good, especially for stuff that doesn't interest me. And it's not a cop-out. It's just honestly how my brain works. Like, it just doesn't sink in sometimes. And if there's more fatigue, if there's more stress, if I have more going on like that, it gets worse and worse and worse. So I'm not the smartest person. And I'm willing to take that dive again. I tried first with the PhD program. Couldn't really balance out my life to kind of keep things kind of mentally and, you know, physically stable enough for me to like finish it right. That, you know, my physical and mental health definitely got in the way. You know, then I ended up working in a job that, you know, I learned to like, and then I learned to hate, you know, just because it got to a point where the pay rate wasn't increasing and, you know, life was getting more and more expensive and I couldn't afford to live the life I wanted. And I saw everybody around me, you know, getting doctorates and getting, you know, their masters, and like, I already had a master's, but they were getting their, you know, licenses and being able to like afford these cars and apartments and all this kind of stuff in expensive San Diego. And I'm just sitting there like, man, I'm living with these roommates. I got this 21-year-old car. It was like a 20-year-old car, a 19-year-old car at that point. But, you know, I was like, I gotta get out of it. And I'm a year later into this journey where I'm so close to where I want to be. But I had to take that risk, you know, of missing a few birthday parties, not being able to go to a few raves, not being able to go to San Diego when I want to, not being able to do all the stuff I want, driving these old cars, you know, doing delivery so I can study more, you know, missing out on things for a year. It might become a year and a half, but it's a sacrifice. But I'm pretty sure I'm gonna end up in a much better position than I would have if I would have stayed in that house with those wild people and just stuck there, you know, and saying how hard it is. And it's hard. Yeah, it's hard, but it's gonna be hard either way. It's gonna be hard to stay in a crap situation, and it's going to be hard to make moves to get out of it. Either way, it's going to be hard, you know. And my situation is different. Other people's situations are different. It's scary. It's not easy. I can't talk for everyone. I don't have kids. I'm not taking care of, like, elderly people. Everyone's situation is different. But I do strongly believe that people can move out of things. It just takes a lot. You know, it took me a lot of depression and anxiety and, you know, other stuff to, like 3-4 months out of the first year when I moved to kind of just, like, I guess in a way, like, grieve the loss of, you know, what I was leaving behind just to try to, like, make something different work. It's not easy, you know. So when CJ is talking about this, the song that went viral, and, like, you know, I can understand that. I'm like, you know, I understand, like, yeah, the reality of it is, yes, it sucks, yes, it's hard, but also, what are you gonna do about it, you know? And it's hard, you know, when things are hard, it's actually harder to get out of things, but there's so much opportunity out there, you know? And, you know, I see a lot of friends, a lot of my friends are, you know, going to grad school now and, like, doing things differently, going back to college and, you know, getting all types of different job trainings. So it's definitely possible. But, yeah, so this Amish potato CJ guy, my beliefs don't fully align with his. I don't really care that they don't. I still like his content. But, you know, we can be different people. We can be different people. We don't all have to believe the same thing, right? But after hearing these two guys debate, Greg Locke and Dean Odle at the beginning, them going back and forth, I kind of got a vibe for both of their personalities and both of their methods of kind of coming at an approach. And so, you know, Dean Odle kind of comes at things from a more, it's almost like he's giving a lecture. Greg Locke comes at things from more of a passionate preaching, you know, perspective. So I'm going to start going through little by little some of the stuff that Dean Odle says. And, you know, about 59 minutes in, they kind of break a little bit. I don't think they cut the cameras. They break a little bit. He has some testimonials. Once he starts, you know, they get him set up on the computer and stuff. So Dean Odle, the flat earth believer guy, he believes, he uses a lot of PowerPoint slides, a lot of visuals, a lot of, you know, like, it's almost like he's a special presenter at a university giving a talk based on a literature review, an extensive literature review from not only religious people, but also from non-religious NASA scientists, physicians, astronomers, just, you know, pulling stuff from just kind of naturally how we view things, photographs, video footage, other things like that. Greg Locke, he has the Bible alone and his preaching style. Now, the whole time, I think almost like an hour in, after like that 59-minute point, the flat earth guy gave so many examples in that 59 minutes once he kind of was able to get Greg Locke to stop kind of interrupting him. Dean Odle gave a lot of examples, you know, and I was kind of like, that's what I wanted to hear. Because usually when you hear people talking about these theories, you know, it's usually like, these people who believe in the flat earth, like, they're dumb, you know, like, that's some outdated thing, like, why are they believing in this? We've moved on, like, you know, that's usually how we approach it. And then we're just like, I'm not even going to listen to what these guys have to say because they're cuckoo. So, you know, Dean Odle gives a lot of good examples, and then he goes into those examples in detail in his speech. So I want to talk about some of those examples that come up after he gives the introduction of these video, it's like video testimonies of people who studied the flat earth. I think some of them read his book. They were all atheists. I believe they were all atheists and came to believe in the flat earth theory, and that led them also to believe in the Bible and Christianity through that theory. I don't remember if they all read his book or just some of them did, but after that point, Dean Odle starts going into some details. So I want to start talking about some of those details, and now here's about to be the first one. All right, so I'm going to get more into this, but these are just the first things that kind of pop out. I went ahead and wrote down some of the timestamps, approximation of the timestamps. So at about 1 hour and 15 minutes, Dean Odle talks about Michio Kaku and Neil deGrasse Tyson. And Michio Kaku talks about the exponential amount of errors with Big Bang cosmology between theory and experiments that they've done. And Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about what was once called missing mass is now called dark matter, and that even when they take everything that they know and try to account for it, there's too much gravity that goes unaccounted for. And then the video goes on to about 1 hour, at the timestamp about 1 hour, 39 minutes, 15 seconds. They talk about the reasons that people believe the earth is spinning as a sphere. And it's all the theories, or all the reasons, for the most part, that I think most of us have heard. So I'm going to go through those. And I'm going by Dean Odle's explanation. Or some of them I don't really know. But he puts 9 of them. I took a screenshot of it, and he says, boats disappearing from the bottom up. So he basically goes through all of these 9 points and kind of shows other alternative proof against it, either some kind of conspiracy method that was promoted by NASA or astronauts or other people, or some other kind of proof that's, you know, for the flat earth alternative aspect to what one of these 9 topics are. So this is how people believe and are taught about the earth being a sphere. A sphere that is spinning, orbiting the sun over an ever-expanding universe. That's the picture that we usually see. This round ball, and, you know, the picture of the sun and the earth spinning as the sun stands still, and the moon, you know, also orbiting the earth as the earth spins and simultaneously orbits the sun. That's a common picture. We don't see that many alternative explanations of what's happening, you know, with the earth. You just don't hear anything about that. So I'll go through 1 through 9. So it says, 1, boats disappearing from bottom up. That's like when you're looking at boats. Like, I live near the ocean. I've seen plenty of boats that, you know, you see them and they disappear, right? After a distance. 2, pictures, they put in quotes, pictures from space. Usually when you see pictures that people state were taken from space, show that the earth is a round ball. 3, fisheye lens photography. So, people using fisheye lens photography to show that there's curvature of Earth, or when people have been, or something has been, like, out in space using a fish lens that makes it look like things are more rounded, right? 4, the alleged shadow of Earth on moon's surface during a lunar eclipse. Now that's an interesting one, and I don't really know off the top of my head. I don't remember if he talked about that or what the alternative explanation for that would be. Number 5, Foucault's pendulum. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but Foucault, Foucault's pendulum. Now, I don't know what that is, and the next one I also don't know. Number 6, Eratosthenes. So Eratosthenes. Circumnavigation is number 7. So when you walk around from one point to, you know, the next, or when you, like, say for example fly, you know, you eventually go all the way around a circle that's like a globe, a spherical shape. Number 9, satellites and GPS. So that is used as proving the spherical Earth. And number 9, grandiose scientific speculations. So I think most of us were taught in these methods. And there are more Bible-based Hebrew and Greek terminology that I think that's the most interesting part to me. But it comes up later. So I'm going to try to keep these about under an hour, so that it's not like, I don't want to make my episodes almost over 4 hours like theirs, but I'm going to try to go into it more and more. So I'm going to post this episode, and then I'm going to post a second one back to back with it, so that you have the whole two, the first two kind of have more information in them, and then we can slowly go through some of the other stuff. And so a little after that, he talks about a boat on water, like a photo of a boat on water. So when you're zooming, sorry, sirens. So when you're zooming in using a camera, or a lens, versus something disappearing over a curved horizon. And this also, they look at a flat football field video. So let me explain this. His explanation for when a boat is on water and you see it disappear, he says, okay, people who believe that the Earth is a sphere say that as the boat goes from where I'm standing towards the horizon is far away, and because the Earth is curving from where I'm at, technically what happens is the Earth curves slightly from where I'm standing at the shore. It's going to curve up a little bit, and then to the point of where the horizon is, that's the point where you see the curvature along the horizon, left to right, and you see the curvature that also would go, like, downward. Like, for example, if you have a ball, and you're just holding the ball up to a wall, and you're only looking at the top of the ball, and you trace your finger from a side, from an area that's close to you, you trace your finger upward towards the top of the ball, that would be similar to the horizon. The top of the ball would be the horizon. And then as you trace your finger past the top of the ball to the other side of the ball, past the top, your finger would disappear over the ball, right? If it's not a clear ball and you're just holding it up to the wall and you're just tracing your finger around it, right? There's a point where you can see it when it's on your side, and then there's a point where your finger disappears back behind that ball. And that's supposed to represent that, you know, boats do that. And so usually what we're taught with the spherical earth theory is that the reason why the boat disappears is because it disappeared over that other side of the ball. You're no longer on the side of the ball that you can see. It's now past the top of the ball and it's off to the other area of the ball, behind where your eye can visibly look, because you can't look through it. And so he says, no, that's wrong. The earth is flat, and the reason why is you can tell that when the boat is on the water, once it looks like it disappears, if you take your camera or a lens or a telescope or whatever it is and you zoom in on the point where you think the boat should be, where it disappeared over the horizon, why can you still see the boat when you zoom in? And then people say, well, you can't just keep zooming in. And it's like, you know, there's no infinite zoom on a lens. Every lens has its limit. And so just because you can't keep zooming and zooming and zooming doesn't mean that the boats are disappearing over a ball. It means, or over a spherical shape, it means that that you just can't zoom in close enough to see it anymore. But the reason why it's disappearing is because it's out of view. It's out of your distance. Out of the distance you can view it. It's out of your vision. So our vision isn't very clear to be able to see that far, however many miles away. And then if you were to use a camera on your phone, even when it seems like it disappeared over the horizon, if you were to zoom in on that, you'd be able to still see it. Technically, you should be able to still see it. Now, I've never tried that before, but I have an ocean right near me, and that would be a very good experiment to try and see. If when something seems like it disappeared over the horizon, if I could zoom in on it, then that means it's still there. It hasn't disappeared over the horizon. It's just, it looked like it did. And then next to that, they have this guy on a flat football field video clip, and you see him walking in the distance, and he eventually, you know, he looks like he's getting smaller. His feet disappear, his legs disappear, and you can see the top of his torso, and then he kind of bends down a little bit, stands back up, and then he walks back towards the camera. And they say, you know, people use that as another theory of the earth being sphere, that the feet disappear first. You see someone disappear from the bottom up, because it's, again, if something's on a curve, you're gonna see that disappearing. But it's the same thing. When you zoom in, you see the whole body of the person. So it's like, it's not like he's going over the curve of a top of a ball or over the curve of a top of a sphere. But instead, because it's small and distant, you can't see it. And those are two different conversations, you know. But that's kind of where, okay, I'm over an hour, but that's kind of where these things kind of start. And I'll go more into it little by little of the things he's explaining. I'm not going to go into every single detail, because I want you guys to be able to watch the video and not have to just listen to me talk about it. But yeah, there's a lot of other stuff that I want to bring up that I thought was, that really captured my attention. But I hope this is of interest to you. Please don't unsubscribe. I don't know. I just thought maybe you guys would like this content. Let's shake it up a little bit. And I'm not going to say what I do or don't believe. I'm just going to put it out there. I like this kind of stuff. You know, I can listen to this all day. So, yeah. But I'm a little rambly. Let me just cut this here.